Welcome to the What Makes a Leader podcast, investigating the connection between leadership, emotional intelligence, and mindfulness. We talk with thought leaders from a range of backgrounds and disciplines, each of whom offers their wisdom, knowledge, and experience to deepen our understanding of what makes a leader. Hello and welcome. This is Hanuman Golman from More Than Sound, here today with George Pitagorsky. He's the CIO of School Support Services for the New York City Department of Education, which is a multi-billion dollar branch that oversees transport, sports, and food services for all five boroughs. Also, George, you've been a teacher of meditation for more than 25 years, and you've been a practitioner of meditation from the early 70s. You're a thought leader and program management consultant, as well as the author of two books, The Zen Approach to Project Management and Managing Conflicts in Projects. You also have an upcoming book with us at More Than Sound called Managing Expectations. And I'm really happy to be talking with you here today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Happy to be here.
I'm going to be asking you about leadership generally, and also specifically about the role of self-awareness and its importance in leadership and its importance also in effectiveness on the job and in our personal lives. So people talk a lot about the importance of leadership in many aspects of life. There's political and business leadership, community leadership. Colleges now are often even using leadership potential as criteria for students that they bring in. And I'm interested in the discussion about the fundamentals of leadership and what it is exactly we're talking about when we use the word. So I'm going to start with a very simple, basic question. What is leadership?
That's a great question. There are thousands of definitions of leadership. To me, it boils down to the ability to get others to willfully do some work to achieve goals and visions. So the leader typically is defined as someone who establishes a vision and then, based on that vision, shares it with other people to get them to willingly follow and therefore achieve the goals. So there's a quality of motivation associated with it, a quality of managing expectations associated with it. And then, in addition, the leader provides information, provides knowledge, provides a methodology and an environment for achieving the goal. And then finally, coordinates and balances all of the potentially conflicting interests that might be in play during the course of the effort to achieve the goal. So leadership, therefore, is this quality of being able to get some other people to accomplish something. And there are many, many variations on it. As you've said, there's business leadership, there's leadership in the political realm, and there's something that I find very, very interesting called servant leadership, there's thought leadership. So there's all different aspects of this quality of being able to somehow influence others in a way that allows them to accomplish something that at a given point in time they think is worthy of accomplishing.
So the key component there, it sounds like, is the goal, having the vision, providing the map to get to the vision, and being able to bring people along to make that happen.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Now, it becomes a bit more complex because it's possible that a thought leader can come up with the vision and then pass the leadership baton, so to speak, on to someone else who is going to establish the working environment and they bring together the people and so forth. So there's different qualities of leadership that can be shared amongst a group of people rather than this concept of having a single leader.
That's interesting. It almost sounds like every idea has a spirit helping it along that is leadership. And if the leadership for that one idea is strong enough, it will carry from person to person until the idea is seen through.
Yes. And then the initial idea, just, you know, take into consideration Martin Luther King, you know, who I personally feel is a wonderful, you know, leader in the social political realm. The idea of nonviolent approach to making change in the political realm wasn't his idea. You know, this came out of through Gandhi and Christ and however many other people took this concept and brought it into life and then picked up by others who actually then got yet other people to follow on and to manifest the end result.
Yeah, it's interesting to look a little bit beyond the individual to see the movement of ideas or of movements themselves through the generations and the leadership being there to steward the idea.
Exactly. And then it even goes further because you have now different levels of leadership, so to speak. There are group leaders, for example, who are leading small groups of people. And they're being led by others who are above them. And they might, you know, in the business realm, talk about the CEO of an organization being hopefully a leader, though not necessarily. Leadership in each of the various departments or divisions that are associated with getting the overall vision accomplished. And they are marshaling their troops, so to speak. And maybe each of those divisions has departments and sub-departments and projects and so forth. And at each level, there's an opportunity for leadership.
And I'd like to extend that a little further to the individual level. How do you see leadership on the individual plane when there isn't another person that we're influencing, but it really is our own personal leadership?
The image that I have is this multiple personalities, you know, multiple personas that are operating as part of our overall complex of me and I. And amongst those components is the leadership component. You know, is there a vision? Where does that vision come from? How is that vision manifested and communicated to the other qualities of mind, so to speak, that are operating? And then from there, the manager, so to speak, is taking the role of making it happen through one's own capabilities. And perhaps those capabilities include the engagement of others in and around one, and it just expands from there. So everybody, in effect, is a leader. You know, leader of one person, leader of multiple people.
Yeah, right. It sounds like you're really speaking to the role of a coach and what a coach can help us do, which is focus on our vision and our goals and help set the map to get there.
Yeah, I think that there's a quality of, you know, one of the dimensions of leadership is coaching. You know, it's the ability to help others to get what they do done. And in fact, I think it's Chuang Tzu that has this notion that the superior leader, the most effective leader, is one who gives his followers the impression that they have done whatever is being done and that the leader was unnecessary, which is really what a coach does. You know, a coach doesn't do the work. A coach doesn't even necessarily come up with a vision. The coach is simply there to enable and to support.
Yeah, empower even.
And empower, yes.
The next question that I have for you, George, is why is leadership important?
Well, this is also a very good question. And based on what we've discussed so far, the importance of it is to ultimately accomplish something. I mean, generally speaking, when we think of leadership, it's, again, that influencing of people to do something, to accomplish a vision or accomplish a goal. So, you know, is it important to get things done? You know, it's like if that is important, and I think it is, then leadership becomes important because it's the leadership that allows the whole process to take place. Without effective leadership, on some level, you don't get the vision. You don't get the support and the environment that is necessary to achieve the vision. You don't get people who are willingly going along to make it happen. And therefore, there's chaos. There's, you know, things will happen, but they won't necessarily happen in a way that one would like them to happen.
So it's through leadership, you're saying, that intentional change comes about.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. If we want intentional change, then we have to have the intention, and the intention has to be articulated.
Because things will change one way or another, and if they change for how we want or how we don't, it depends on leadership.
Exactly. And it gets into an interesting, you know, philosophical issue about, you know, do we really have any control? You know, things are going to happen in one way or another anyway, so, you know, why bother fooling ourselves into thinking that we have control? Personally, I think that there's a, you know, like a both-and quality to it, that in the end, we're out of control, but we have some influence on what's happening in our actions, and through the process of our own personal intrapersonal leadership, we're going to angle in one way or another. And as we see what's happening, the leader has got another quality, which is resilience and adaptability. So as things change, the leader is helping the others, the followers, to adapt and change and move in a way that is in keeping with the aspect of non-intentional change, or the aspect of intentional change that's occurring above and outside of one's scope of control.
One thing that sticks out to me about what you just said is that given we know conditions will change, and often conditions change quickly and in ways that we would prefer they didn't, and so the influence that we have clearly isn't on the entire world, but what we know that we can have some intentional development over are the skills internally, so that when that external change does happen, we can receive it in a way with the tools that will allow us to move forward through the chaos and make sense of the chaos for others as well as ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. That adaptability has to be built in. And it is the leader's responsibility to build the understanding that the vision and the goal are malleable. They're capable and should be changing as the external situation calls for it.
Yeah, and messaging, making sure that message is appropriate and honest and motivational at the same time.
Exactly.
And that leads directly to the next question. If these skills are so important for addressing the world as the changes unfold and difficult situations as well as pleasant situations that arise, how does one develop the leadership skills themselves?
That's also an excellent question. And again, complex. There are those who say that leadership cannot be taught in the same way that a specific skill is taught, but that it can be learned through access to coaches, to good examples, to mentoring, and so forth. So it's that complex that comes to bear, coupled with what might be an innate capability, a potential, where I think you brought out in the beginning that colleges or universities are looking for students with leadership potential. What does that mean? Perhaps there's a quality, whether it's nurture or nature, that is causing that quality to be there from early childhood. There's the development of these potentials for being a good communicator, for having a sense of how to get other people to do what it is that one wants to do. And I can see it in my own children and grandchildren. From an early age, they're great manipulators. You know, you have a child, you've probably seen the same thing. If that's developed and hopefully angled in a positive way, then, that's really the cultivation of early leadership possibilities.
Because it speaks to influence and the understanding of the ways that we influence the world around us.
Exactly. The child has a vision, wants a piece of chocolate, wants, this or that, and is now going to use whatever capabilities are present. At the earliest stages, it's screaming and crying and banging, things against one another. And then, as one gets older and more capable of using language, hopefully that part goes away and is replaced by by language and so forth. And we can see that in certain adult leaders, so-called, who use shoe-banging on the table or screaming and yelling and so forth as the means of getting what they want or getting other people to give them what they want.
Yeah. And that influence is a key component to what you describe as leadership, being able to bring others on board. And it does start early. I have seen that in my own child, absolutely. So when we look at things like these skills you've mentioned, influence, adaptability, coaching, a part of our approach here at More Than Sound is looking at those individually, these 12 competencies that Goleman and Boyatzis organized their emotional intelligence model into. And our contention is that one does learn these, as you say, whether it's learned or taught, that one is able to acquire them or develop them. And what we're looking at really is, although they are deeply interconnected and dependent on one another for effectiveness, we're interested in initially looking at them individually and seeing how do we develop this one competence. And this month, January 2017, we're focusing on self-awareness and how one develops self-awareness. Why is it important to leadership? And what is it, really? And in the EI competence model, self-awareness is foundational to all of the other competencies in order to, even just for the development process, self-awareness is a key component. How do you see self-awareness as important in leadership?
Well, I think not only in leadership, but in life in general, it's critical to have a sense of the ability to step back and to be aware of the, you know, the so-called self. And, you know, there's that in and of itself is a is a very interesting object to delve into. So I think in the simplest cases, we can think of self-awareness as being aware of one's capability to operate as an individual. How one thinks, how one speaks, how one acts in some way is happening. And is there an aspect of mind that is capable of observing all of it? And that observation is what I would consider to be what self-awareness is. So that being the case, then, you know, how does one see that as being important? Well, without it, one is kind of operating in kind of the way a typical animal operates. You know, they just do. And their doing is coming out of some degree of habit, some degree of innate conditioning and so forth. And they're just operating reflexively, this reactivity. In order to be effective as both a leader and as a non-leader, you know, a person acting in the world, it would be much preferable to be responsive as opposed to be reactive. That responsiveness requires a degree of self-reflection to see what it is that is perhaps bringing up the immediate impulse to act, and that based on an awareness of that impulse and the ability to actually make a choice as to how to act, as opposed to having to act out based on that impulse, then you are much more able to be adaptable to the current situation, which in and of itself is a quality of leadership. So I think that, you know, from the point of view of the importance of self-awareness, it is self-awareness that gives us the ability to be effective in the world through having a responsive capability.
It reminds me of any system that is not perfect and the results that we achieve through an imperfect system are not exactly the results that we would like. And in order to upgrade the system, we need to understand what isn't working well. And it's that feedback loop, that feedback to what's not working well, we'll upgrade that, then we'll look at it again. What's not working well, we'll address that and look at it again. It's that feedback loop that's similar to what you're talking about internally.
Yeah, exactly. There's that. And then there's also the quality of recognizing that the part of the correcting of the system, the perfecting of the system, is also a choice. If we're conditioned to reflexively say, oh, the system is broken and therefore I can fix it in this particular way, without thinking about, well, what's the cost of fixing it in that particular way? What do I mean by broken? What's my expectation with regard to the way the system should be operating? And is that expectation realistic? So the imperfect system, from a Zen point of view, is a perfect system.
Can you say a little bit more about that?
The notion is that whatever is occurring because that's the only choice.
There's nothing inherently good or bad about things as they are.
Exactly. So they are as they are. So included in that system, that current operating system, is imperfection. There are flaws. Zen potter actually imposes a flaw in his perfect pot as a reminder of the idea that nothing is going to be perfect in the sense of something that is fabricated will not be perfect. So there's this acceptance of imperfection. Now, at the same time, the paradox is that we don't necessarily want to perpetuate that imperfection. And therefore, we have that feedback loop that says, okay, here's an imperfection. What was it caused by? The leader is also very, very much of a cause analysis person. Yeah. So, but what was that imperfection caused by? You know, and once I understand the cause, is it something that I can actually influence? If I can't influence it, then I can still refer to that imperfection as an imperfection. But I can make the choice to now say, well, I'm not going to do anything about that in terms of changing the system. I'm going to change my operating process going forward. And I'm going to perhaps take advantage of that so-called imperfection. And if I do that, the imperfection is no longer an imperfection. Now, the true systems person would say, well, that's just part of the system, and that's part of the feedback loop, because by changing your behavior, you're changing the system, because we're, you know, you're part of that system. So it depends on how far back from the system you're stepping. Is the system something that you're objectifying and taking yourself out of? If it is, then you can, you know, operate it on it in the way that you describe. If the system is inclusive of you, and this is where self-awareness also comes into play, then you can be perfecting the system, but you're perfecting your own behavior within the system as part of that perfection, and you're accepting flaws in other parts of the system.
So from the Zen perspective, the system is already perfect, and it's from our individual perspective that there are changes that we might like to make to the outcomes that continually unfold. So it really comes down to what are our own desires and motivations. That's what we look at to identify what we're calling as imperfections in a system or elements that aren't performing as we'd like.
Yes. I think that's true. It's this idea that we have of how things should be. And that's driving our perceptions of the system and flaws and so forth. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of the perfect system. That's there. And it's now, how do we use that? How do we use that? And also, what is our perception of perfection based on? What's our underlying value structure? And that becomes very important from a leadership point of view, because we've seen leaders in the world, I think of Adolf Hitler from one perspective, was a great leader. He was able to get a whole, country and then some to follow and try to achieve a vision, which was a pretty horrible vision. And in the end, led his followers into, a pretty dismal situation.
But he was highly effective for quite a while.
Highly effective. For let's say 20 years,
Yeah. So leadership can be terrible.
Leadership in and of itself perhaps can't be terrible. Leaders can be terrible.
What is that piece there? Somebody's a particularly effective leader and yet leading people to act terribly towards others. What do you think is the missing element?
Well, I think the missing element is values, having a higher or lower level of, what is the ultimate value that one brings to the table? What is one's intention based upon? And how much of that is really about shifting from the I-centered type of leadership, you know, I want this to happen, I think that this is the best thing in the world, to more of an other-focused leadership where compassion and loving kindness and the qualities of how to, without differentiation, bring peace and love and all of that good stuff into the world. If that's the base, then it's more likely that the leader will create a vision that is going to manifest those kinds of values. If on the other hand, the intentions and the values are more limited, particularly they're focused on a small number of people, even as large as a country, but more likely a family or an individual or a, you know, an oligarchy of some sort, then what happens is that the potential end result is going to be relatively negative, because those who are not in the group that is the focus of the leader are going to not necessarily have their needs met. So I think that this quality of an equanimous representation of compassion and loving kindness and sympathetic joy for the things that are good for other people, that set of qualities seems to be a very solid baseline for the intention that leads to the vision, and then the vision that leads to the goals, and the goals that lead to movement and change.
Run through that list of qualities again. Where are you drawing this from?
In Buddhism, there's the notion of the abodes of the gods, the divine abodes. And they are compassion, loving kindness, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. So as I interpret that, it's basically saying that if we have the understanding that our basic nature is one that is seeking to manifest these basic qualities, and the last one being not limiting them to a local group of some sort, that becomes kind of a baseline. And depending on one's philosophical orientation, one can take on the notion that that's intrinsic to everyone, or that those, while not necessarily being intrinsic, are worthy of cultivating as baseline values. And either way, one then monitors one's behavior through self-awareness to cultivate more or less of that.
I wonder if you have any examples in your own work, in your own life, of how self-awareness has been key to being effective.
I have a couple of interesting examples. One from my own experience, so maybe 50 years ago. And I was elected as president of a social group in college, and, you know, therefore viewed as a leader of that group. And what I found was that the followers weren't particularly, we were college students. So doing anything that was too serious was not particularly a high priority. And my job was supposed to be to lead them into doing things that were relatively serious. And I found myself getting totally frustrated, not having the awareness that I needed to just relax and accept what was going on and then do what was possible with that group. And as a result, I quit. I said, you know, you guys don't want me as a leader, you know, too hard. You know? I think if I had more self-awareness at that point in time, I would have seen that my frustration was coming out of some kind of a ego-based need to get things done that I thought needed to be done and that I wanted to get done in a particular way, step back from that, and then find the way of motivating the others to do what it is that was best for them.
So you're almost talking about self-awareness, or rather the lack of self-awareness, as blinders to what's going on initially internally, but really it's blinders to what's going on externally, because all we can see is our story that we're holding inside.
Exactly. I believe in emotional intelligence, we talk about the ability to see what's going on internally to, in effect, have the ability to moderate one's behavior, and then also to see what's happening externally, you know, from a social intelligence perspective, to again moderate our behavior so as to influence in a positive way the external world that we're in. So it's that combination that is enhanced by self-awareness, and without that, you have much less effectiveness. The effectiveness then requires just this power, you know, to force things to happen, which generally, you know, it can work and has worked in for reasonably short, but sometimes longer than we would like, periods of time. It leads ultimately to failure and to disruption.
Brute force is never sustainable, but it also breeds resentments. And so you're compromised eventually in your effectiveness.
Exactly. Yeah. And it usually relies on an individual, you know, the individual leader, which I think we really need to get further and further away from because it's so hard to find the beneficent leader.
Yeah. And that's why I'm focusing on the qualities of leadership and how can we each become a leader in our own world. We're all the center of our own world, you know. So if we all had more of these qualities that allow us to address the situations that we find ourselves in, then the world will actually become more effective because we individually, we become more effective.
Exactly. Yeah, and there are many examples that I've run into as, you know, I've spent, say, from the mid-1970s through the early 2000s as a consultant, with a particular focus on getting projects and programs accomplished in a rational way in large corporate settings. And I've seen many, many very, very intelligent, highly effective leaders without self-awareness causing serious disruption and shooting themselves in the foot, not getting what they actually wanted because they were so convinced that only they had the right way or that they had to be in control of anything. They wouldn't delegate properly. They weren't cultivating leaders at the next level who in turn could cultivate leaders. They were kind of stopping everything and blocking the real flow of ideas and capabilities and might have been successful to get to where they were, but from an organizational point of view, were ultimately failing. And we've seen that in, you know, countries as well as companies.
Yeah, and I think that's a common phenomenon, that the higher we get in an organization, the more one needs to rely on these emotional intelligence skills for effectiveness.
Exactly. So self-awareness is, I think, one of the primary ingredients of effective leadership, which in turn is a primary ingredient of actually getting things done, effectiveness.
What you just described a moment ago is the way that self-awareness also affects our other awareness. And it makes sense from your initial description of it as keeping us from seeing the effect that we have first on ourselves and then on the world around us. It's as though only through self-awareness can we actually see what's happening around us as well, the people included.
Exactly. Otherwise, we're just seeing a kind of a reflection or a projection of our own perceptions are being projected out and then bounce back to us. And that's the way we see our affect in the world. Instead, you know, can we be objective enough to step outside of ourselves and really see what's going on?
Thank you so much, George, for being here with us today. And George Pitagorsky is the author of the upcoming book, Managing Expectations, which we're all looking forward to. Thank you.
Thank you.
For more audio, books, and videos on emotional intelligence and leadership, visit us at morethansound.net.